13. The crowd roared. In the afternoon of that historic day, the crowd blurred in the heat of the sun, and its combined voices thundered approval of the small man standing on the platform, the tiny figure that gestured and spoke and waved its arms. Loudspeakers carried the speech, amplified the original voice until it bellowed over the surge of crowd noise. Beyond the mass of people were the ruins that had been Frankfurt, Germany. "My friends," Jones shouted, "the entrenched plutocracy has tried to silence me, but they have grown soft. Like great parasites, they sit behind their desks, running the world. They have grown fat on us. They have feasted well. But it is going to end. I can see it." Shouted approval. "We must strike out," Jones raved on. "Beyond the world. Beyond the dead systems. It is our destiny. The race cannot be denied its future. Nothing will stop us. We cannot be defeated." On and on he went. And somewhere, standing silently among the spectators, untouched by the feverish harangue, waited the police assassin. He had been a soldier in the war. He was a crack shot with a suitcase full of medals. In the last stages of the war, he became a professional assassin. The chance of his shot missing the target was 1 in a million. On the day of the speech, Pratt was driven from the labor camp at Manresa, Spain, to the outskirts of Frankfurt. As the long, low-slung car purred over the twisting roads, he went over in his mind the way he was going to do it. There wasn't much to think about. His whole body was geared to the job ahead. After a while, he put his head back against the luxurious seat and enjoyed the pull of the powerful turbine. The car led him off in a deserted area, a patch of ruin and gaping bomb craters that hadn't been reconstructed. Pratt sat down among the ruins, got out his lunch, and ate. Then he wiped his mouth, picked up his rifle, and trudged toward town. It was 1:30. He had plenty of time. Along the road moved people and vehicles, a constant swell of individuals moving in to hear Jones. Pratt joined them. He was one of many. As he walked, he carried his rifle openly. It was a war rifle, the one he had used in the final confused days. His decorations permitted him to carry it. The rifle was a badge of honor. The speech did not interest him. He was too practical a man to be moved by the excited tumult of words. As Jones shouted and gestured, the lean-jawed soldier prowled around, looking for the point at which the march would originate, the spot where Jones would take command of his gray troopers. This part of Frankfurt still lay in rubble. A residential section, it was the last to be repaired. The inhabitants were living in temporary barracks erected by the government. As Jones's speech came to an end, groups of organization workers collected here and there, obviously in prearranged patterns. Pratt, standing with his rifle, watched with interest. Before him lay what looked like a cement wheel. The wheel was a solid mass of followers, assembled together in a single grim heap. The crossed retort flag fluttered on all sides. Everybody had armbands or uniforms. Ahead of the wheel of gray lay an open stretch of Landstrasse, the still undamaged highway leading into the town. The highway had existed from the time of the Third Reich. It had been constructed by the Nazi engineering genius, Dr. Tott, and his OT-Gruppe. It was an excellent highway. In a little while, the gray wheel would unwind and march down it toward the town. The police had carefully cleared all traffic from the highway. Police patrols walked up and down the deserted strip, waving people angrily back. A few children and a stray dog scampered excitedly ahead of them. The noise was already deafening. Milling lumps of spectators were breaking away from the nearby field, making toward the assembly point. Pratt winced as groups surged against him, their eyes glassy, mouths open and half clogged with stale cheers. Lifting his rifle, he climbed up on a heap of rubble out of the way. A corps of newspaper reporters with flash cameras were taking pictures of the crowd and the gray mass of organization agents that formed the first ranks. Helmeted police were everywhere, in pairs and threes. They all carried weapons. They looked cruel and uneasy in their brown uniforms. Where the stretch of highway began, four ambulances had been parked, two on each side. Elaborate TV equipment had been set up nearby. The technicians and medical teams stood joking and lounging. The reporters took pictures of them, too. They were taking pictures of everything. Pratt made his way with caution. He managed to slide through the final fringes of the crowd and out into the open. A moment later, he was standing at the main police barricade erected at the edge of the highway. The uniformed cops gazed at him blankly. He wasn't known to them. One of them, a giant with a vast moon-like face, detached himself and came striding ominously over, his machine gun raised.
"Get over to the other side," he yelled at Pratt. "Get off the highway."
The police were stretching heavy white rope on both sides of the pavement to keep the march confined. They wanted to be sure it went in the right direction. It was supposed to go where the weapons units waited.
"God damn you,"
the big cop yelled.
"I told you to get out of here. You want to get killed?"
"Where's McAfee?" Pratt said.
"Who are you?"
Pratt located Police Major McAfee, the officer in charge of the detail. Approaching him, he showed his identification.
"All right," McAfee muttered, preoccupied.
He didn't know what Pratt's mission was, only that he was on a security job.
"Get up there on one of the trucks. That's where you'll get the best view. Stupid bastards are starting any minute."
McAfee had picked a good place for the barricade. Once the marchers had gone past it toward the city, the trucks would cut through the rope and swing around, blocking the highway. Then, as the crowd streamed back, the police teams would sort through them. Caught between two police walls, Jones and his followers would be trapped like cattle. More trucks were waiting to take the followers off to forced labor camps. The barricade itself was formidable. He doubted if the mob, and it would be a mob by that time, could break it. Trucks plus heavy guns and maybe a line of tanks. He wasn't too familiar with that part. This would be the initial police attack. Jones dead, the policy-level followers rounded up. And then all over the world, city by city, the rest would be netted. Over a period of days, perhaps weeks, the roundup would continue, slowly, efficiently. Reaching up to the truck, Pratt began to climb. Six or seven hands reached to help him. He sprawled awkwardly, clutching his rifle and struggling, until somebody helped him to his feet. He brushed himself off and found a place near the front. He wasn't the only one with a war rifle. Several flashed in the afternoon sunlight. As he stood his gun upright, nobody paid attention. They were all watching the marchers.
"This is a good location," he said to McAfee, as the police major followed after him.
McAfee eyed the rifle.
"What's that you have there, an old A5? I wish you guys had thrown them away."
Obviously, he thought Pratt was a bellicose war veteran, nothing more.
"We ought to yank the firing pins out."
"There are a lot of people down there,"
a sergeant observed uneasily.
"You think they'll get by us?"
another asked nervously, a young kid.
"They're crazy. They might do anything."
"I don't think so,"
McAfee said vaguely, peering at the mob through his binoculars.
"They want to get killed," the sergeant said. "That's what they're out there for. They can see us. Jones must know we're going to close in on them. Can't he see the future? Isn't that his line?"
Warm wind smacked at them from the ruins and half-filled craters. In the distance, across the hazy sky, a row of transports moved slowly, inexorably. The men in the trucks were restless and irritable. They whacked their guns against the metal hull around them, spat over the edge, shaded their eyes against the bright sun and peered angrily at the gray wheel of marchers.
"It won't be long," McAfee commented.
The crowd was obediently forming behind the gray phalanx.
"How many do you figure are there?" Pratt asked.
Thousands, millions. I guess the big cheese is going to ride in his car while the others walk.
McAfee indicated a parked limousine.
One of his rich backers gave that to him.
He's supposed to be out in front, a reporter said, overhearing McAfee. According to the crap they put out, he'll be right up there marching at the head.
I think he will, Pratt said.
You know anything about him?
The reporter demanded, his puffy face slack and avid at once. He was a typical Berlin newspaper man, in baggy tweeds, a pipe in his mouth, cynical and aloof.
No, Pratt said. Is it true Jones is an escaped con from the Bolivian forced labor camps?
I heard he used to be with a freak show, the sergeant said. He's a mutant, one of those wartime sports.
Pratt said nothing. His head ached from the glare and the dust blown by the dry wind. He wished things would hurry.
Look, the reporter said to McAfee, let me ask you something. Those guys there, what is it, some sort of racket? What's the story on this thing?
Get going, McAfee muttered.
Isn't it a racket? What's Jones in it for? He's got a lot of rich backers, right? He's a minister or something. This is a cult, right? Rich people kick in money and a lot of swank clothes and cars and jewelries. He has all the babes he wants, right?
Nobody answered. Presently, the reporter addressed himself to a tall, thin cop who stood pressed against the railing, his arms full of rocket-firing equipment.
Hey, the reporter said softly, is this really a FedGov stunt to whip up interest in colonization? They're going to spring a big immigration deal? Let me in on it.
Christ,
the reporter muttered plaintively.
I'm just trying to understand this thing. It must be an angle. I'm trying to figure out what he's in it for.
A short, red-faced cop swarmed up onto the truck carrying telephone lines.
I'm glad I'm up here, he panted to McAfee. That's gonna be a mess when they hit the blocks in town.
The reporter put his hand on the man's shoulder.
Hey, friend, he said. What the hell is all this? What are those loons in this for?
Catching his breath, the red-faced cop paused.
It's not a racket.
Then what are they after? Give me the word.
If it was a racket, we wouldn't have any trouble. We could buy them off.
That's interesting.
The reporter eyed him languidly.
You ever met this Jones?
No,
the red-faced cop admitted.
But my wife shook hands with him once.
He added,
she's a member.
The reporter was incredulous.
No kidding.
She's probably down there, marching.
Take off, McAfee snapped at the red-faced policeman. Report back to your unit. The cop obediently pushed to the back of the truck and leaped down onto the highway. The reporter scratched a few notes on a pad of paper and then put it away. He eyed Pratt's rifle curiously.
What's that you got there, Dad?
He asked. Pratt said nothing. He was feeling worse each minute as the sun glared above them. His mouth was dry and acid. The touch of an ancient malaria shivered through him, bringing its weakness and chills. It was always this way before a kill.
That's a wicked-looking hunk of metal, the reporter observed. You gonna blow some guy's head off with that?
Get out of here, you big-mouthed bastard, the thin cop grated, before he blows your ass off with it.
Jesus, the reporter said. You guys are sure touchy.
He edged toward the far side of the truck.
You're as bad as those loons down there.
Pratt wiped the sweat from his upper lip and steadied the rifle against the side of the truck. The metal shone bright and hot in the furious heat. His eyes burned and his legs were beginning to wobble. He wondered how long it would be before the gray started unwinding and flowing forward. Not long, probably.
Let me use your glasses, he said to McAfee.
Don't drop them. McAfee passed the binoculars over. His hands were shaking.
Christ, this thing is getting me. If anything goes wrong, I'll be in a labor camp along with them.
Pratt gazed through the binoculars at the Wheel of Gray, with its dense and obedient mob packed in behind it. Jones had arrived. He was standing in front, conversing with the organization workers. Now the marchers were being formed in columns of 10, a long snake with its gray head on the edge of the highway and its body out among the ruins. The waiting marchers milled and pushed. Pratt could hear them, a thin, constant din. They were shouting and yelling as loud as they could.
"Hear them?" he said to McAfee. "Give me back my glasses. I think they're starting."
"They're not starting."
Pratt adjusted the focus screw.
There was his prey, the small, gaunt, familiar man with his steel-rimmed glasses, unimpressive, unimportant-looking. That was Jones.
"Come on," McAfee shrieked. "Let's have them."
Pratt returned the binoculars. McAfee quickly swept them up and refocused them.
"By God," he whispered. "Here they come. They've started."
The columns of gray had moved onto the highway. The yelling, shouting crowd was creeping along behind them. Dogs barked furiously. Children ran back and forth in frenzied excitement. On the trucks, the weapons police shuffled uneasily and raised their guns. Jones, at the head of the columns, marched with jerky, uneven strides, directly down the center of the highway. A quick mechanical pace, like a wound-up doll. Without the binoculars, Pratt could not make out his face. Jones was still a long way off. He grabbed up his rifle and threw off the safety catch. Raising it, he stood tense and expectant. Around him, those with guns were doing the same.
"Remember," McAfee muttered, "don't fire, let them past. Let them be on the barricade, then get ready to close in."
On one of the trucks, a policeman teetered, then fell sprawling onto the highway. He rolled, quickly picked himself up, and scampered in panic for safety beyond the white rope.
"Bring up the first trucks," McAfee ordered into his phone.
The columns of marchers were moving past the barricade. Some of them glanced fearfully at the parked trucks, the crouching police.
"Get them up," McAfee screamed. "Start the motors, you jackasses!"
The first of the marchers had passed the barricade. Coming from Frankfurt was the first line of police tanks. The other jaw of the trap was closing. The marchers would never reach town. With shrieking roars, truck motors came to life. Driving around behind the marchers, the trucks flowed out onto the highway, cutting them off. Abruptly, the marchers halted. Roars of dismay rose above the thunder of motors. The columns broke and wavered. The long gray snake suddenly dissected itself. Those behind hesitated. Those ahead began to mill in confusion.
"They're in," McAfee was tonelessly saying. "They're between."
The marchers were not moving forward. Jones had halted. He stood peering warily around. Like a little rat, Pratt thought. A dirty little yellow-toothed rat. He raised his rifle and aimed. Now the whole crowd was in motion. The mass that had been heading up the highway split into aimless pieces, people hurrying in various directions, off the highway, through the rope. It made no difference. Fast-moving police cars were racing along the rim of the ruins, herding them back. It was chaos. Pratt paid no attention. He saw only the small, thin figure of Jones.
"You're under arrest," loudspeakers boomed. "Stop moving and stand still. You're under security arrest."
Some of the people halted. Stricken faces turned upward. Airborne police units were landing. A group of organization toughs broke into life and raced toward a police team. Clubs swinging, the toughs crashed head-on into the waiting unit. A tangled mass of gray and brown struggled on the pavement. More marchers fled from the highway toward the ruins beyond. On foot, running police batted them down. Clouds of thick dust rose, obscuring the scene.
The air was filled with screams and crashing roars. A truck groaned, then slid gradually on its side. A wall of crazed fanatics had pushed it over. Aiming carefully, Pratt fired. His bullet missed Jones entirely. Stunned, he threw the bolt and again raised the rifle. As he had fired, Jones miraculously, inexplicably had stepped aside. A split second, it was incredible. Obviously, Jones had expected it. Scrambling from his truck onto the next, Pratt made his way around the edge of the crowd. He leaped down onto a mass of ruins. Grasping his rifle, he gained a precarious footing and loped rapidly forward. This time he would fire from a few feet away. This time he would be directly in front of Jones. Dropping to the highway, Pratt forced his way into the crowd. Using the butt of his rifle as a club, he beat his way among them. A bottle burst over his head. For an interval, darkness swirled, and he floundered against a mass of wildly struggling human bodies. Then he dragged himself up and crept on. All at once, he was sprawling. Clutching the rifle, he rolled to his feet and managed to get to his knees before a gray-clad shape smashed him with a length of pipe. This time he lost teeth. Warm blood gushed down his throat, choking him. Blinded, he lay gasping. Huge, crushing boots stamped on his ribs. He shrieked, groped upward, caught hold of a trouser leg, and tugged. The figure stumbled and fell. Pratt rolled on him, his hands around a section of broken bottle. With a swift stroke, he cut the man's throat, pushed the body away, and climbed up. Ahead of him was a cleared spot, a dead center in the maelstrom of frenzied shapes. Jones stood inert. Behind his glasses, his eyes darted frantically. Around him had grouped a knot of organization fighters, a last-ditch defense. Kneeling, Pratt managed to get his rifle up. Flickering mists danced in front of him. He was suspended in a silent, unmoving interval. Automatically, his fingers squeezed the trigger. There was no noise, only a faint shudder of the gunstock. He saw Jones stumble, clutch at his belly, and then pitch over on his back. He had only wounded him, got him in the gut, not the head. Cursing, weeping, Pratt fumbled with the bolt. He had failed. He had not killed him. While he was trying to fire again, a vast gray shape loomed up, drew back its foot, and kicked the gun from his hands. Two more shapes appeared. He experienced a blossoming second of agony, and then it was over. His last instant of life had passed. Between the three of them, the gray tufts had decapitated him. Sitting on the pavement, spitting blood, Jones sat waiting for the police medical teams to reach him. From where he squatted, he could see the remains of the assassin. Dimly through a haze, he watched the infuriated gray figures destroy what was left. It was over. Between his clenched fingers, the living warmth of his blood oozed. He had been wounded, but he was still alive. In his agony, there was already the roaring joy of victory.